Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Famuliner. This week, the True False Film Fest is back in Columbia for its 11th year. The documentary festival draws thousands of people each year and brings in most of the year's best films. The last two Oscar winners for documentary showed at True False the year they won, and four of the five nominees for the Oscar this year were at the festival last year. This year, one of the films is based in Missouri and made by mid-Missouri natives. Rich Hill documents a year in the life of three teenagers from the town Rich Hill in west central Missouri. Each has their own struggles, both internal and external, and the film shows us how the place that they live affects their everyday lives. Today on the show, we'll talk about that film, about what it's like to produce a film in Missouri, and about the festival as a whole. Joining us in studio today is True False Film Fest co-founder David Wilson. He and Paul Sturtz call themselves the co-conspirators of the annual festival. David also just produced a feature-length documentary based in Branson. David, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you.
And joining us by Skype today are the co-directors of the film Rich Hill, Tracy Droz Tragos and Andrew Droz Palermo, our first cousins. Andrew was born in Columbia and grew up in Jefferson City. Tracy lived in Columbia as a young child before moving to Northern California, but their parents and grandparents grew up in Rich Hill, and they often visited the town growing up. Tracy and Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
We'd also love to hear from you and our audience. Are you planning to attend True False this year? What films are you looking forward to seeing? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet at intersectkbia, or you could join our online chat. So to start, why don't we start talking about Rich Hill? Andrew and Tracy, tell us a little bit about where this is in Missouri and just a little bit about the town itself.
It's a community in southwest rural Missouri. It's between what used to be I-70 and is now the interstate and the number I can't remember, but between Kansas City and Joplin. And as you mentioned, it's the town where it's our family hometown. Our grandmother was the third grade school teacher. Our grandfather was the rural mail carrier there. And Andrew and I grew up, spending summers and winter breaks there. But over the years, we've seen the community fall on hard times. It's called Rich Hill because it used to be a coal mining town several generations ago, but the coal went dry. And little by little, the town has, fewer jobs and a smaller population.
Yeah. So who are the people that live there now?
There are many farmers live there and people who have lived there for generations. There are some, there's some employment. There's a Dollar General store and a couple of gas stations and a post office. And the best jobs are with the school. Those are the sought after positions. But many families are struggling, and those were the stories that we wanted to tell. We wanted to understand what it was like for those who really were having a hard time.
Sure. And so the story, like you said, the story you felt that needed to be told. How did you start identifying and finding the subjects of the film?
Andrew, you want to...
Andrew, you can jump in anytime here.
Yeah, I could talk forever.
How you identified who the subjects were of the film and which stories were going to be told here in your film.
I was just going to say we sort of met them all in different ways. Met Apache at school. Our cousin, who was a gym teacher there, recommended him. And we met Harley through his cousin, and Andrew just sort of, by happenstance, we met him in the...
Yeah, and so what about, once you had met these people, what about them made you decide this is someone we're going to focus on, out of everyone that lived there in the town?
Yeah, well, it was primarily, there was something about each of them that we both thought was something very soulful, and they all So Apache and Andrew in particular are very introspective, despite being so young. But then it really hit us when we went home with them and met their families and saw how much love they had with them in their home and how willing they were to share that with us. And, you know, I think we were both very touched by that and drawn to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we knew at the onset that we wanted to shed light on the circumstances of these families, but we didn't know what the angle was going to be. And I think Andrew and I talked a lot about wanting ultimately to tell the story from the perspective of these kids, these adolescents, because it's much harder to dismiss them. It's much harder to say, oh, it's their choice, or if they had just, you know, if they just pull themselves up by their bootstraps, they'll be able to, you know, figure it out and whatnot. It was a more sympathetic vantage to share the lives of these, ultimately these families. And then of course, once you're inside, and we hope, you know, like we did, what you get to know them, we hope that you open your hearts to them, audiences will, and, you know, won't be able to dismiss any of them.
Yeah. This might be a good time to bring in a clip from the film. This will be a clip of one of the characters you mentioned, Andrew, in the film, whose family moved a lot. Knowing that information helps a little bit as you see this clip here.
I honestly think that God's going to give me friends, and that God's going to give me people that hate me. God's going to give me girls that like me. So I just let it all form together. I just say to myself, and whenever I get friends, then I have friends. I mean, I hate moving, but I know if we do, we do. I have no say in what happens. They're the parents. I'm just a kid.
So, Tracy, you mentioned, you know, telling the story through the teenagers. Why was that an important, I guess, mechanism when you were trying to tell the story of this town?
Well, I mean, I really do think, you know, there was a bit of pushback. I mean, when we first cast a rather wide net, and we were really talking to all kinds of people and really just wanting to get a perspective of the experience of the town. And then when we settled on our families and on our kids, there was a bit of, and not from very many, but just a few of sort of like, well, why are you focusing on these people? Why are you focusing on these families, you know, that somehow they weren't deserving of having their stories told? And, you know, I think we felt in focusing on the kids that it's a harder argument to make that their stories are less deserving somehow, or that it's their own, you know, bad decision making or sort of corrupt moral compass that have, you know, that they're in the circumstances that they're in. So, you know, we felt it was just harder to dismiss by telling it from a kid's point of view.
Yeah, and the film does still delve into the parents' lives a little bit.
For sure. And of course, you know, the parents were once kids, you know, not so long ago. And I mean, that's, I hope, a deeper reflection that, you know, folks will have about this. You know, these aren't folks that should be dismissed no matter what their age. But we were particularly drawn to tell the story from the kids' perspective.
I'm going to take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today on the show, we're talking about the True False Film Festival and about the film Rich Hill, which is based in Missouri. We're also talking about what it's like to make a film in the Show Me State. Joining us in the studio is one of the co-founders of the True False Film Fest, David Wilson, and joining us by Skype are the co-directors of the film Rich Hill, Tracy Droz-Tragos and Andrew Droz-Palermo. We'd love to hear from you and our audience. What do you think about the topics brought up by the film Rich Hill? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So, David, we haven't heard from you yet. I just wonder your thoughts on Rich Hill. Have you seen the film?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I guess what's your reaction? What are your thoughts on Rich Hill?
You know, I thought it was I think it's a really poetic film, and that's something I really appreciate. And I think Andrew used the word soulful when looking for, you know, talking about finding their subjects. And I think that's true of the film as well. There are maybe not a lot of films, but, you know, there are a few films that sort of go into rural America and I think come out with fairly surface looks at those places. And that's what really struck me about Rich Hill, is I feel like this is a truly emotionally deep look. It's a truly deep look at their characters. And I found it to be a really powerful film.
Mm-hmm. And, I don't know, Tracy or Andrew, I wonder your thoughts on that, on the intention there, making this deep as opposed, you know, because it is difficult when it's a town you're very familiar with and you're sending this out to the world, right? So, to David's point there, what were your thoughts on that part of the process?
Yeah, I think David kind of brings up a point that I often have felt, that growing up in Missouri, you see some of these depictions of rural America and they never really accurate to me. They kind of, they felt sensational, or they weren't, you know, they were quick to the green lawns and, the happy summer days, but necessarily aren't also looking at the truths of rural life, or maybe are only looking at the hard truths and don't show you some of what's great. And so, I think that was something when we started, we really wanted to make sure we were capturing it and felt accurate to the place and to the people, and let them also be the authors of the story.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it could be, if you want to think about it this way, it could be the reputation a little bit of the state that you live in. I mean, I'm sure as a documentarian, you're worried about making sure and having the true story as well. But does that enter in your mind a little bit when it's, again, like you're saying, it's your state?
Yeah. I mean, I think so. I think a little bit. I mean, at some point you kind of have to let some of that go. And I wasn't thinking that it was inaccurate to do such and such. That's not Missouri, but, ultimately, we're trying to worry, and I think there are some choices made that you wonder it's accurately portraying a place.
Sure.
Yeah, and I mean I think it, even though the film is called Rich Hill and is set in a place that is very important to Andrew and me, a very specific place, it became something bigger at some point. It became less of a nostalgia piece and less of a personal exploration into a town that was so near and dear to us, to something that had more national relevance. And that really was because of the families we met, and because we felt strongly that their stories weren't being told, and their stories weren't being told in the kind of way, that we thought that they should be told, which is more in depth, a little less sensational and surface. But more thoughtful. And so we spent, nearly a year and a half with our families and got as deep as we could with them. So we hope that, it becomes then more relevant, not just to Rich Hill and not just to Missourians, but to people from communities across America that people fly over or drive by.
Right. I think it's really telling that there's a moment in the film, and I think it happens with all three of the boys, where you ask them what their hopes and dreams are, mm-hmm. And I think that moment is missing so often in projects like this. That moment doesn't happen because either we think we know and we don't ask, or, we don't bother asking because we are more interested in their current moment and what we can say about that moment. And I think it's, Andrew and Tracy's credit that becomes an important part of the movie, that these boys aren't just sort of the caricature of their current state, but that they can have, they're allowed to have hopes and dreams for the future, like everyone does.
Yeah. I think actually that's a great point to bring in. We actually have a couple clips I think you're referring to there pulled of, first you'll see Apache and then Andrew again, who we saw a moment ago. So here's another clip from the film Rich Hill.
I was thinking about moving to China. I think about moving to China and becoming an art teacher. Because paintings and stuff from China are freaking awesome. I get to sit there and draw dragons all day.
I praise God, I worship Him. To him every night. Nothing's came, but that ain't gonna stop me. This is what goes through my mind. God has to be busy with everyone else. eventually he will come into my life. I hope it happens. It's gonna break my heart if it don't.
So Tracy and Andrew, I wonder, to David's point, how did you get these kids to open up about those thoughts, and what, and I guess what impressions did you get? Was it what you expected, the kind of answers you expected to hear?
you know, I think there was a lot of trust that we earned over time, and that we shared with each other. I don't think we talked necessarily about hopes and dreams in any significant way, you know, on our first or second visits, but we really became quite close with these kids and their families. And then, you know, we talked actually a lot about it. We probably, you know, from a certain point on, would talk about it all the time. And, you know, I think sometimes their answers change, you know, they're still figuring it out, and that doesn't, so on any given visit, it might have changed. And, you know, depending on the mood and depending on what was going on in their lives. But, you know, what David mentioned earlier, I mean, I think it was very important to both Andrew and me that ultimately it was less about whatever the specific dream might be, but that they had them for sure, and that, you know, we felt quite strongly in their potential to, you know, that still existed, and we wanted to have our audience kind of share that feeling of some measure of hope for them. You know, not all of their dreams might seem attainable or realistic, but, you know, we're still quite hopeful that some of them might be realized, especially with, you know, with this film and maybe a little bit of light that might be shed on rural communities and kids like them with this film.
Was that one of the, you know, from the outset, was that one of the stories you wanted to focus on, or elements, I guess, you wanted to focus on, was, you know, what the future's like for rural youth? I mean, you know, it's a kind of an ongoing story, you know, what opportunities are available there in the communities they're already in.
In part, yeah, I think that's true. And I think, I mean, with the three boys that we follow, I think a lot of it was trying sort of whether or not their ability to dream was being broken or not. And I think, you know, as they faced more and more challenges over the course of the film, it looks like, without spoiling things, that a few of them are a little touch and go about having their dream broken, or having even the ability to dream, you know, pulled from them. But I don't think it was a good thought for us. Do you think it was, Tracy?
You sort of actually were cutting in and out there, but...
Am I cutting out?
Ask the question again, please. I'm sorry.
Sure. It was just that if that idea of the future of these rural towns through their youth, I guess, if that was one of the starting points for the film, or if it's just something that just kind of developed, I guess, as you met these youths.
I mean, I think it was a part of it. It was sort of like, what is the future? It's the question. And I think Andrew and I very, very much now, after spending a year and a half with our families, you know, feel quite strongly in wanting that question to be asked, and wanting to be part of the conversation around that. You know, what can we do to bring resources and support and attention and help kids like these realize their dreams? I mean, because that's what it's all about. And I mean, you know, let's not build more prisons and, you know, put them there. Let's help them realize their dreams. So, I mean, it would be amazing if our film could help have that question, you know, answered and be part of sort of the answering of it, I suppose.
Sure. I'm going to take a moment to remind our audience, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking about the True False Film Festival and about the film Rich Hill, which is based in Missouri. We're also talking about what it's like to make a film in the Show Me State. Joining us in studio is one of the co-founders of the True False Film Fest, David Wilson. And joining us by Skype are the co-directors of the film Rich Hill, Tracy Droz-Tragos and Andrew Droz-Palermo. We'd also love to hear from you and our audience, what do you think makes Missouri an interesting place to film a documentary? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. We'd like to remind you, you can watch Intersection as streaming video online during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2 at kbia.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to kbia.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2 online at kbia.org. And we actually have a caller right now that I was hoping to bring on, Maxwell from Columbia. Maxwell, are you there?
Yeah.
Great. Thanks for calling in today.
You're welcome. First, I just wanted to say to David and Paul, all the people that around the True False, it's a fantastic festival. They've done an excellent job. Just the films themselves and the interaction with the filmmakers and all the little side events and everything that are wrapped around the film festival, too. Just really excellent. It's really a great benefit to Columbia. But I wanted to ask the Rich Hill filmmakers, first, I really like the way, just from what I've read a few things and listened to you now, I really like the way you kind of were telling the story about demographics and the evolution of the town through history and really telling a lot of stories through the personal narrative with these kids. And, I think it's really great, but I just wanted to ask, what kind of, as this developed, process developed and making the film, what really surprised you really pleased you and how it developed and how the ideas that are kind of expressed through the story came out?
Great, Maxwell. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'll mention maybe some of the things that surprised me. And I know, Andrew, you know, we both had kind of different experiences, but would often come together at the end of the day and share them. And I mean, for me, I think it was the trust that we were shown, the way that we were welcomed in the homes, and the way that there was a desire to share their stories and a desire, you know, to say, you know, yes, we're having a hard time, but you know, we want people to know about it. So it was a real kind of bravery. And an honor as a filmmaker to be given that kind of access, and I think it surprised me, and it would continue to surprise me the trust, and I hope that we didn't do anything at the end of the day to violate that trust, and I feel like we have. I mean, the subjects have seen it and are very, very supportive of it, so I'm, you know, continue to feel good that we made good on that. But I was so, so honored by the way that we were received. So that's something that I think surprised me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, I think it was, I think the amount of love and how willing they were to show it to each other, despite having so little and, you know, really verbal about it. And, you know, Andrew says very early in the film how much he loves his and his father and his sister, and you know, he's just so outright with it. And I just love that. It was something that maybe my own family doesn't do, and something perhaps that I might want to my family in the future.
And I would only add that I think, you know, there was like a generosity of spirit with that. You know, a kind of, and Andrew and I were often shown that in just ways of, you know, their concern about us, you know, whether it was Andrew getting a new pair of shoes or, you know, swearing in front of me or something like that. You know, they were just so, so generous and respectful. And I think that's not a rap that kids like this often get. You know, they're just not seen in that way. And then, you know, if they don't get a chance really to be as respectful and kind as they actually can be.
Sure. This might be a good time to bring in another clip from the film, actually. This is a clip of Apache earlier in the film as we're getting first introduced to him.
My dad left when I was 6. Just walked out. Didn't even say bye. Woke up in the middle of the night and he was gone.
You never came back?
And for those in our radio audience, you can't see Apache smoking a cigarette there. I'm not sure how old he is at that point. Very, very young. So there are a lot of serious issues that are brought up in this film, socioeconomic, mental health issues. I wonder your thoughts on that aspect of the film and I guess the reaction to that part of the film and what that's meant, I guess how that's affected you, frankly, as filmmakers.
Yeah, I mean, there were some hard times in the making of this film to just come back and realize how complex some of the issues were that the families were facing. And it became clear to us that we weren't going to be the kind of social issue documentary that kind of picked one cause or one angle or one piece of legislation to overturn, because it is so complex and there are many issues. And we felt like, okay, we're going to approach this from an intimate perspective, from, you know, this is a long-term, you know, a longitudinal project that we're spending with these families. So it, this would be a social issue documentary really from the heart as opposed to the head. And we would start a conversation that way rather than, you know, sort of simplify and focus on one issue. But there were many, many issues, and I think not all of them, to go back to the caller earlier, not all of them we anticipated being exposed to.
Sure. Yeah, not to give too much away, but there is a lot as the characters develop, and it seems like as they open up to you that, you know, there's a lot of depth to these stories and different issues that arise.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and not all of it we felt like we could ultimately get into. You know, we didn't want to overpopulate the film. We didn't want to overcomplicate it. We felt it would be better, you know, better not to have every single thing that we, you know, hardship revealed. But ultimately, it is even more complicated than our film reveals, and there are even more issues. You know, all the moms in our film were teenage moms. None of them finished high school. All of them had some measure of abuse in the home as a child, which contributed to them getting pregnant as teenagers and leaving their homes early because they wanted to escape. Every single mom in our story experienced that, and that's not, you know, that is not included. But you start to see these cycles, and it's it can be overwhelming how, you know, what the opportunity is to break out of that kind of cycle.
We're going to have to take a short break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about the True False Film Festival and about the film Rich Hill, which is based in Missouri. Joining us in studio is one of the co-founders of the True False Film Fest, David Wilson, and joining us by Skype are the co-directors of the film Rich Hill, Tracy Droz-Tragos and Andrew Droz-Palermo. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Intersection. This is a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and today we're talking about the True-False Film Festival and about the film Rich Hill, which is based in Missouri. We're also talking about what it's like to make a film in the Show Me State. Joining us in studio is one of the co-founders of the True-False Film Festival, David Wilson. And joining us by Skype are the co-directors of the film Rich Hill, Tracy Droz-Tragos and Andrew Droz-Palermo. And for you in our audience, what do you think True-False means to Mid-Missouri? And to filmmaking in general, share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection at kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia, or you could join our online chat. So, David, maybe you could tell us a little bit about how this film, Rich Hill, was chosen, and I guess just in general how some of the films are chosen for the festival each year.
Sure. I mean, films come to us in a variety of ways. With Rich Hill, we obviously knew Andrew quite well. I think I've been aware of this project since they first started going down to Rich Hill and shooting. So I'd seen a couple of trailers, and then, you know, they offered to show it to us. I can't remember if it was before or after Sundance announced, but, you know, we were able to sit down and watch the film, and it was pretty easy choice. I mean, you know, after seeing it, I think we were inclined to like it, but we're also a very picky festival, and we certainly don't play favorites, and so we're, you know, as much as we were inclined to like it, we're probably also bracing ourselves for having to have a difficult talk with our friend. And instead, you know, it's just a really wonderful film, and it was such a great feeling to see it, and just feeling really proud, you know, of Andrew and Tracy as filmmakers and as Missouri filmmakers.
Sure, yeah. And I guess, does it help, I mean, even though you're not picking favorites, does it help to know that the audience here will be able to relate, I guess, a little bit, or, you know, feel a little invested in the film a little bit, since a lot of the audience is local, I would say.
Sure. Know. I mean, I think there are moments when we think about, you know, a local bump, you know, that a film gets a little extra boost because we know that it's high interest. But, I mean, Rich Hill didn't need it.
Yeah, yeah. So, I guess, you know, to that point, for local filmmakers, Missouri filmmakers, films about Missouri, do you still like to keep an eye on those specifically for the festival, or like you said, it comes from a number of sources, I guess.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you know, we try to be sort of topic agnostic, mm-hmm. so that we'll watch any film about anything from anywhere and really try to consider it as a film, on its craft, on its merits, like that. That said, yeah, if it's in our backyard, if it's a local filmmaker, if it's a chance to sort of help somebody who maybe is off the radar for whatever reason, mm-hmm. Then we want to do that, mm-hmm. and that's important to us.
When we had you on the show last year before the festival, we spent almost the whole hour talking about this next question. But I guess just to recap a little bit, talk about how the festival's grown over time and I guess what it looks like now compared to what you ever imagined it might look like, I guess.
I mean, yeah, we went into the fest with fairly modest goals, and I think we just wanted to create something that was really high quality and really served both the people of Columbia and the kind of then nascent international documentary community. It felt like over the years we've been able to do that and do those in tandem, and that's kind of become the heart of the fest. And the people have responded. I think the handmade quality of the fest, the sort of love that goes into all the aspects of it, people get that, and people mm-hmm. feel that, and it's instinctual, and it makes people want to come to the fest, makes people want to help out the fest. So we've had wonderful growth, and yeah, we expect to have our, you know, the most number of people ever this year.
Yeah. Is that kind of a interesting balance, I guess, as the reputation grows and, you know, it becomes more well-known to still keep everything with that homegrown feel, I guess?
Yeah, it's a huge balance. And, you know, we don't particularly want to be a large festival. We want to be a small festival. We want to do as much as we can for filmmakers and as much as we can for our local community. So having more people is good in a lot of ways, but it's not our end goal. And we're not going to always look to be growing.
Right. And so, Tracy and Andrew, I wonder your guys' thoughts as filmmakers, too. Obviously, you have a relationship with David, so may not, you know, and he's sitting right here. But still, I wonder your thoughts of, from that perspective. Yeah,
plug
you can cover
ears.
His ears if you want. From that perspective of your peers and the reputation it has now and what you think of the festival.
Well, I'm of course biased, as you noted. But as, like, Tracy and I have been doing all these different things over the course of the last 2 years, different festivals, or at Sundance, for instance, or at IFP in New York, and it seems like every filmmaker everyone, you know, says, oh my gosh, True False, it's my favorite festival, like, can't wait, you know, until you guys can, like, So Tracy hasn't experienced it yet, but I think she has her expectations pretty high.
Way too high, Tracy. You need to lower your expectations.
I was actually mentioning that to somebody this morning. I am so excited. I can't even I've just heard so many wonderful, wonderful things. But every interaction that we've had, and, you know, just even the way that filmmakers reserve tickets and all of that, I mean, is so nice. It's really, really, I'm excited about seeing films, and I'm really excited to come. So I have every reason to believe that it's going to fulfill my expectations, but I will have to say that my expectations are exceedingly high because I've only heard really amazing things. Like, this is a filmmaker's film festival, and it's a film lover's film festival. So that's the best.
Well, unequivocally, we can say that the quality of films are very high, right? I mean, again, we mentioned at the beginning of the show that four of the five films nominated for the Oscar for documentary this year were at True False last year. I think some of them even debuted here, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe not. But we have a lot of films debuting here every year as well. I mean, what's it like to be at that scale now?
I mean, honestly, you know, part of the reason that I think we're able to keep a really high quality is that we actually don't care very much about debuting films, and we're really just looking to put together the best group of films that are, you know, new enough so that they haven't had lots of ways to come into the world, but really the best group of new-ish films that we can. And this year, I love that this year we're programming films that had their debut, you know, almost a full year ago, that we thought didn't get the attention they deserve, that really we want to make sure those come and get seen by our audience and are part of the discussion. And obviously we're showing films that are brand new and just coming into the world. And I think we can be a place that supports both, but in doing so, we don't necessarily trumpet one over the other. We're sort of saying, here is a slate of great movies, and here's a slate of films that we think are helping define the conversation around nonfiction.
Mm-hmm. And to Tracy's point about it being a filmmakers festival as well, I mean, obviously, the audiences, I think many people in Columbia would say they feel like it's great for the community as well, but to that community of filmmakers, I guess, how is that important, I guess, and how do you nurture that?
Absolutely, absolutely. We really serve those two communities, and we want filmmakers to come with their films. We want them to feel welcome and like it's relaxing. We want them to see movies. You know, I mean, Tracy and Andrew can speak to their experience, but most filmmakers I know who debut films at Sundance don't get to watch any other films while they're there.
I think we each saw one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we each saw one. Yeah.
And so, you know, there's this whole crop of filmmakers coming from Sundance who've just had this big debut, whose films are coming into the world, and they've met each other, you know, but they haven't actually seen each other's movies. And so that's one of the services True False offers, is, hey, come and watch these movies that you've been sort of around, you know, mm-hmm. And will be around. You know, there's a circuit for these films. These films will go on a journey together over the next year to other festivals. And having some buddies on that circuit is actually pretty great psychologically.
Mm-hmm. And then to the other point of that question, the community aspect of it too, I guess, of Columbia and you know, surrounding areas. You know, how do you feel? What's been the focus there as well? And, you know, it's been a lot. That's kind of changed over the years as well. It's with venues even and everything like that.
Right. I mean, we've expanded to fit need. We've really built out both the music and the art, the visual arts part of the fest. So this year we'll have more sculpture, more installation art around the festival footprint than ever before. And, you know, we think it's all to create an experience that goes beyond what you can get watching movies in any other environment. We want to create this whole experience that involves movies and music and visual art and parties and a parade, and people can sort of dive in, you know. And we think these are exciting films. We think these are thrilling films, and they're films that can be enjoyed by everybody. And so we want to create an environment that shows these films off to their best.
Right. And Andrew, just to bring you back in too, I wonder, again, now with your perspective, having been here for True False in the past and volunteering, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. what's it like, again, to be on this end of things now?
It's really, really exciting. I mean, I think I'll have a better perspective at the end of this weekend or the coming, but, you know, I'm like David said, I've, you know, met all these filmmakers, haven't had a chance to see their movies. That's amazing. And yeah, it'll certainly be a trip to be on stage and instead of, you know, watching from the audience. And I have a long list of restaurants I'm planning to hit, a full schedule of all my favorite Columbia restaurants. So it's going to be a full weekend for me.
Yeah, better allow some time to wait in line. It's going to be busy downtown, I'm sure.
Yeah.
One thing that I thought would be good for us to talk a little bit about, because all three of you can relate on this, is the concept of making a film in Missouri. Because, David, you just completed recently a film based in Branson. So I wonder just a little bit about what makes Missouri different, unique, what about making films here and I guess some of the strengths that Missouri has in that way.
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, obviously we all did this because it's a place that's close to us in physically or emotionally or whatever. But I think also, you know, if you look at the process of making a film, when I went into Branson, I found people reaching out to help us. You know, someone would say, hey, do you need water shots? Come out on my speedboat. We'll go get some shots on the water, you know. And I don't think that happens everywhere. You know, certainly there are places where people are much more jaded about filmmaking, where people maybe just aren't as nice in general. And so the kind of welcoming spirit, you know, the, hey, come over to our house and have dinner, or, hey, did you get, you know, do you need tickets to something? You know, I mean, those are my kind of Branson experiences that, that really made us feel welcome. And certainly there are, you know, in Branson, and I know in, I think in Rich Hill as well, there's skepticism from some people about these filmmakers coming in and what are they going to do. But I found overwhelmingly that the warm reception and the excitement outweighed that.
Tracy and Andrew, I wonder your thoughts on that same.
Yeah, topic. I would definitely echo that. I mean, it not only is like a great place to shoot just visually, you know, I think there's a lot of texture to the state and has, you know, a lot of amazing natural areas, and then, you know, has city, it has everything sort of, but I think the people are sort of the best part, and they're not so tired of people filming around their houses that they're like, you know, asking, they're excited to help. You know, we shot a feature, I guess not 3 years ago in Columbia, and it was, we found a great house and got all, you know, a lot of in-kind services, and, you know, like David was mentioning, and out in LA, it does not seem that way, and people are really intense about, you know, and needing money to come shoot in their home or whatever it may be, you know.
Yeah, Tracy, too, I wonder your experiences compared to other experiences you've had.
Well, I mean, I think it the same thing. I mean, we were very, very welcomed, and some of that was because of our relationship to the community. I mean, our grandmother had been the third grade school teacher for a lot of the folks in town, and our grandfather had been their, you know, mail carrier. So they knew us, but at the same time, I mean, there was just, there was a lot of support. You know, Andrew got to fly up in a little prop airplane and hang out of the window, and somebody, you know, donated that to us, and we were allowed to go places to sit in volunteer fire department meetings or come, you know, past the ropes and be underneath the fireworks as they were being set off. And, you know, it was very welcoming and inclusive. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of mistrust. So I really was impressed by that, and it certainly makes filmmaking more fun.
What about, is there anything that could make it easier to make a film in Missouri? Is there anything that's kind of missing? Or, you know what I mean? Are there any obstacles when you're in Missouri and as opposed to somewhere else?
Yeah, I would. I'm happy to hop in on because I wrote a narrative recently for Missouri, and and recently the tax credits have been pulled. And as a result, I'm having to take the film elsewhere. It's, you know, it's really disappointing because I really did want to film in Missouri. It's what I know. It's what I like. And I'm in a state that I've never, ever shot a frame in. I'm going to film in North Carolina. And, you know, it's kind of sad for me. And I kind of mourning the loss of a friend or something. But, you know, I think there is some help that this do to help bring productions to the state, you know, that are willing to spend money within these. So.
Could you explain that a little bit more for someone in our audience who may not be familiar, or maybe David, you could help, I don't know, whoever.
Yeah, there's incentives that certain states offer, which, you know, you may spend a certain amount of money for every, you know, dollar you spend, the state may give you 20 cents back or something. Missouri used to have credits, and I think our narrative that I shot was one of the last films that worked under the tax system, I think for budgetary reasons, as I'm sure a lot of states are going through a lot, and maybe it wasn't working or something, but you know, it's sad to see you go.
But aside from that, is there anything else that Missouri's missing? I don't know.
You know, I think we're still, you know, there's only so many crew people. There are certain technical things that that are harder to find here. So it's always a trade-off. But I think, for me, and I'm sympathetic to Andrew, it's those tax credits are very competitive among states, and when you're looking at the bottom line of a small independent feature, you sort of have to go with the place that's going to give you some money back. But hopefully those come back, a little bit more infrastructure develops here. I think there is that kind of variety that Andrew spoke of, and I think that Missouri does have a chance to be a state where a lot of films get made, and it's certainly an industry which I think is really good for a place.
I'm going to take a moment to remind our audience that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuliner, and today we're talking about the True-False Film Festival and about the film Rich Hill, which is based in Missouri. We're also talking about what it's like to make a film in the Show Me State. Joining us in studio is one of the co-founders of the True-False Film Fest, David Wilson, and joining us by Skype are the co-directors of the film Rich Hill, Tracy Droz-Tragos and Andrew Droz-Palermo. For you and our audience, what types of documentaries do you think should be screened at the next True-False? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You could also tweet us at intersectkbia. So back to that thought, Tracy, you'd mentioned before, and I think, Andrew, you mentioned it too, about mistrust that people may have when you're filming a documentary. Do you worry about that when you're editing? What's the thought process on that when, you've noticed that's an issue for some people, and then you're putting the film together?
I mean, I think we were clear that we wanted to honor the experience and the personalities and be authentic to our families. So if we ever felt that there was a time when they were maybe not, having a really sort of an extra low moment or maybe we're performing for the camera. That didn't end up happening very much because, we're very small. It's really was just Andrew and me most of the time. So there wasn't a lot of kind of performing for the camera. But I would say that, when you're in the editing room, and revisiting footage, there is some stuff that we chose not to include out of, either respect or that it just didn't feel true at some point. But then we had a lot of footage. So there was a lot of stuff that did feel true and did, that just we couldn't include because we had 450 hours of footage and we wanted to make a 90-minute movie. So there's a lot that goes through editing, many, many, many choices and decisions.
Sure. And we kind of talked about this before too, but I wonder too, when we're doing a film about Missouri, do you think about what the audience outside, I'm sure you do, think about what the audience outside the state, how they're going to receive it? And I guess, for some people on the coast, a story about people in Missouri might be a novelty, right? It might be somewhat exotic. What do you think about that when you're putting a film together?
Sure. I mean, when we made We Always Lie to Strangers, the film in Branson, we all through the process, we thought if we can come out with something that surprises everybody, that surprises somebody in LA and somebody in Columbia and somebody in Branson, then we've done our job. We want to have new knowledge for everybody and something that either takes away an assumption they had or creates a new set of understandings. So I think we were successful with that, but that was definitely one of our goals all along.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Tracy and Andrew? Again, with the film, this film being from Missouri as well.
I mean, I would just say on the flip side of that, we also. I think we didn't want to do anything that alienated that was sort of so extreme. I mean, there's a phrase that sometimes is used, that something feels just too exploitive, that it's almost like poverty porn or something, that it just wasn't. So we were mindful, I think, also to pull back at times and not so that we wouldn't alienate. So we wouldn't alienate our audience. And that was also a choice in the editing at how we introduced our subjects and how we introduced our families. We really wanted to invite people into this world and not, not have them, go away or tune out or tune off, too soon because it seemed so other. We really wanted to kind of close the gap between us and them and not have it people push it away.
We actually have a question from the chat room I wanted to bring in from Josh. It relates to something we were talking about just a few minutes ago. He asks, do you know any efforts being made to reestablish the Missouri film tax credits? I don't know the answer to that. Does anybody have
I think certainly those efforts are underway. Andrea Sporsik is sort of the head right now of the staff for the Missouri Film Commission. Bill Lennon, I think, is still the president of the Film Commission. They'll both be at True False. So, you know, hopefully they'll be out there drumming up support. And, you know, hopefully an event like True False helps legislators see that there is something here, that there's an economic reason to do these tax credits. I don't think filmmakers are looking for a handout per se. I think, you know, they really feel like, hey, we're going to bring in some resources and some money, and if we can get some of the same kind of benefits that, you know, a much larger corporation gets scaled appropriately, then that's actually a good thing for everybody.
Another interesting thing I'll just bring up here that kind of relates to filmmaking here in the state is, and filmmaking in this building, is that the MU Journalism School just announced that they're going to start a documentary film program. I wonder your thoughts on that and what it might mean for documentary filmmaking in Missouri.
This is a hugely exciting step forward, we think. You know, True False has wanted to see, you know, from afar, something like this for a little while. And I think that this effort is going to be a game changer for MU and for Columbia and for documentary. It really creates a home within an already great journalism school for people to think about the connections between journalism and documentary and really advance that forward. And thanks to John Murray and his gift, it's going to be a strong program right off the bat. And so we're very excited to see the program come into being and grow and to work with it closely as part of as True False.
One of the thing I'd like to – we talked about it briefly before the break, but maybe like to bring back up as well, Tracy and Andrew, is, again, the issues that were brought up in your film. I wonder, too, you know, many people after they watch a film like that will want to say, how can I help these people or help address this problem? What kind of feedback have you gotten on that, and what are what's your mindset on that part of the process now that the film is out?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have told a very intimate story, and it's a very close-up perspective, and it's specific to these three kids and their families. And in some way, we feel like at this point, their trajectories have already shifted by their involvement in this film and, going to Sundance and having audiences embrace them. I mean, their lives have already shifted in many kinds of ways around being a part of this film and their continued relationship with it. But we really hope that people will also be moved, you know, beyond these three kids and their families to think about, you know, their own communities and to think about communities like Rich Hill. And we are right now developing a strategy for our engagement campaign, and we hope to partner with organizations. There are a lot of groups in Missouri that we've already been in contact with. Andrew hosted over Christmas break before Sundance a brain trust in Jefferson City with several Missouri leaders. And so we hope this film will be used in a variety of ways to bring resources and attention and empathy to families and kids. And we, you know, have a lot of ideas about how that might happen.
And David, this is the thing that I think comes up probably every year at the festival when audiences see films like this. What's your thought on that, on this part of the process? Again, when someone wants to help and, wants to, you know, the True Life Fund, I think, was one aspect or one approach to that.
Sure, sure. And the True Life Fund is a fund we started, and you know, unfortunately, we can only pick one film a year to associate with that. But I think it's a really vital part, and I think that it actually, especially with Rich Hill, we're going to see a lot of interest in this. I should point out that in addition to the screenings at the Fest, there's a panel called From the Art House to the State House, and it's going to look at Rich Hill as a case study and be a sort of open discussion about how this film, with all of its kind of, I think, wonderful kind of poetic quirks, can still be an instrument for change, you know, as people want it to be. So figuring out how to use this film in ways, you know, beyond its existence as a piece of film art, which I think it also very much is.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting to us, the reception that we've had from policymakers and organizations who actually feel like they really, it might be a more powerful tool for them without it having a specific ask, if that makes sense. It being, you know, without, you know, sort of saying this is the one thing you can do, or this is the 1-800 number to call, or, you know, this is the one thing to look out for. We're actually finding that there are many more organizations who really appreciate the fact that we haven't taken, you know, one angle to this very complex problem, and that they'll be able to do more with it and actually, you know, have more. You know, it'll make the world a better place because it's not reducing this problem to one single issue. So we're talking to many anti-poverty organizations. We're going to New York actually just before True False to screen with representatives from the UN who are looking at the United States more intentionally now, and to poverty issues within the United States. And then, you know, we're also talking to a lot of people involved in juvenile justice and how this can be a tool in working with kids in the juvenile justice system, not just in Missouri, but beyond.
Sure. Well, we only have about a minute left in the show, so David, I'll ask you the stereotypical question is, what's next for True False Film Festival again? This year, we've already talked about some of the new things this year, but what do you think the future holds this year and next and beyond?
I've just got to get through the next week. That's my next right now. I did want to mention, for those who are kind of following closely, we've added a screening of Rich Hill. It's a small screening. It's a little ragtag. We have three other very large screenings, but those tickets are all available, and they all start being sold at our box office just to anybody who wants a ticket starting on Thursday at noon. So for those of you who heard this who think, that's great, but I go online and they're NRT, or, you know, I don't know how to get involved with the fest, we will have tickets for the screening. You'll have to get there early on Thursday. You'll have to line up and wait in the queue, but those tickets are available.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to stop it there for today. That's all the time we have for today's Intersection. Thanks to our guests, one of the co-founders of the True False Film Festival, David Wilson, and the co-directors of the film, Rich Hill, Tracy Droz-Tragos, and Andrew Droz-Palermo, who joined us by Skype. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and take part in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersections, a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute, and is a project of RJI and KBIA. And we're sad to say today that this is the last live show produced by Raymond Tungekar. Raymond's been KBIA's lead producer on Intersection for the last 2.5 years, so if you've enjoyed this program since then, it's largely thanks to him. He's moving on to Madison, Wisconsin to become a producer on the nationally syndicated talk show To the Best of Our Knowledge. Best of luck, Raymond, and thanks for leaving this show and KBIA better than you found it. Intersections produced by Raymond Tungekar, Janet Saidi, and Ruben Stern. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Caleb Hoke, Casey Morell, and Andrew Yost. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. And I'm Ryan Femuliner. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.